Hey, everybody, come on now. Comedy Film Nerds episode 340.
A couple days late because you had a directing gig.
Whoa, I was in South Dakota doing some business for the open primaries, people.
Nice.
If you're in South Dakota, vote yes on Amendment V. Open up the primaries, nonpartisan primaries. It's good business. Yeah, that was cool. I interviewed...
Well, hopefully your work there will help with that.
Yeah. Let's hope. Yeah, it's actually a cool thing. There's a Republican, a Democrat, an Independent, former lawmakers that are all working together to get this bill passed.
Sounds like fantasy to me.
Yeah, it's like, it was cool. I interviewed them, and the things they were saying were like, we're actually working together. And, you know, one guy used to work in Washington and was like,
yeah, well, no cable news is going to cover that.
No, no, they're not. No, the 24-hour news cycle needs fighting.
No, yeah, that's
fighting
cooperation.
Fear and misinformation, yeah.
That doesn't sell Viagra.
No. That should be their slogan. Corporate media. Getting along doesn't sell Viagra. That's great.
So we got a lot to talk about. This is our second week past post-PodFest.
Right.
And it's we're going to be talking about Magnificent Seven, Mrs. Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, some interesting DVDs, and talking about Shriekfest coming up this weekend. But first, we'll talk about our sponsor. This show is sponsored by Harry's Razors.
Which I used last night after I got in late because I flew from Sioux Falls through Denver and had a little bit of a layover, then got on a plane, and then a 17-year-old kid had an anxiety attack on the runway, tried to get into the cockpit, and we had to go back to the gate so he could get off.
Wow.
Don't know if this is related. He smelled like weed. but we got to turn off the air, buddy.
Oh wow!
Come on,
look at that on Energy Saver.
So, after I had a little bit of a delay, I got home late last night, and I needed to take a shower, and I needed to scrape the airport off of me.
Nice,
the freak travel day off of me. So I use Harry's razors, which they don't have to be a sponsor of the show anymore for me to use them. But now they've got this new, so they sent us this new pack that you can get, which is a free, all you got to pay is shipping and handling if you use coupon code ComedyFilmNerds. They got the new handle. The other ones were like a stainless steel one. Now they've got kind of a grip one. It's kind of a rubber handle, which I like. I shave in the shower. I look at myself when I'm naked.
Must take you a while.
And it comes with this. It comes with shaving cream. It's a great trial. Like, if you're like, I don't know, I've heard about the Harry's razors, I'm not sure. They keep updating their blades, making improvements on them, but then they don't raise the price. And they got aftershave lotion. I've tried it all. It's really cool stuff. So,
I love the fact that they're literally giving it away for our listeners. It comes with a razor, a 5-blade cartridge, and a shaving gel. And, it's free when you sign up for the shave plan, and you just pay shipping. That's it. But they're going to give you a little extra for being a listener of Comedy Film Nerds.
What? What can you get?
You're going to get a post-shave balm.
Nice.
Added to the order for free.
Sorry, did you say bomb, B-O-M-B?
I did. Yes. A shave bomb, yes. It explodes and shaves your face. And all you have to do is use the coupon code Comedy Film Nerds. That's it. So go to Harry's. .com. That's HARRYS.com, and use the code Comedy Film Nerds and get what you deserve. Get the free kit.
Polish up your man face.
Yes. And get the post shave bomb and have it explode all over your razor face.
Yeah, there you go. Let's introduce our guest.
Let's do it. First time guest.
We're getting a lot of good first time guests.
Giggling in the background.
Giggling first time guests.
I got yelled at once for doing that at a podcast. They were like, they don't know who you are yet. Be quiet.
Oh, yeah. Some podcasters take it very seriously.
Well, it doesn't make any sense because when you download the episode, it'll say episode 340 with Karen Rontowski.
Right.
So they already know who you are giggling.
It doesn't say wait for announcement.
Yes.
Say we're not telling you the guest until you listen. But Karen Rontowski. Hello.
Hello, guys.
So you've been, we've known each other for a while.
Wide and varied career. Comedy, supernatural.
Paranormal. Tarot. Yeah, yes, tarot. All the Treat. Oddities.
And you, did you guys go on a tour together?
We didn't do a tour together. You know, Karen does this thing for this women's Oasis thing. You do it a couple times a year. Why don't you explain what that is? Because that's, I think, the first... I started communication.
I think we knew each other, but it was the first communication. Yeah. Oasis Women's Rehab is a halfway house for women in Sylmar, and it's one of the they run on a shoestring budget. They had all their budgeting cut after George Bush Sr., and for 20 years now we've been doing comedy fundraisers for them. They have the best success rate in, I think, Los Angeles County. They're really great, and they mm-hmm. also are the only rehab that will take women directly out of jail. So, and they, like I said, they run on a shoestring. So we do comedy fundraisers for them probably like every other month in the summer. And mm-hmm. then in the winter we wait, and they have it in their backyard, and the tickets are like $10, and it's just built up a great audience over the last 20 years.
It's one of the coolest things. Like every time you ask me, I do it maybe whatever, once a year, twice a year, something like that. I'm always like, it's such a cool thing because you're helping people out that have gone through a tough thing, and it is a support group. It is a, you know, you're helping them get through a tough time. They bring their family members. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first time I did it, some of the comics were like, boy, I got drug jokes in my act and I don't want to offend anybody. I said, these are recovering addicts. There's nothing they haven't said, done, or heard at a meeting.
Yeah.
So you can...
They may not be as thin-skinned as you think.
Yeah, they've got
the thickest of skins.
Yes.
They've been to hell and back. So it's a really cool place. And if you go to oasiswomensrecovery.org, they have a donation button. You're really helping people get their lives back on track, yeah. And it's the coolest. It's one of the... And if you're ever around in L.A. or live in L.A. and just as a... you don't have to be a recovering addict to come to that show. You can just support these women that are going. It's a great show. And, you know, I have stuff that I can only do material wise at that show, you know? And, so that was, it's a really cool thing. So that's,
what's yeah, the website? That's a,
it's oasiswomensrecovery.org.
So check that out.
Yes. One time they had a girl that got out of jail. She was actually in a cage trying to raise money. Were you there when we had the cage? I can't remember who had when we had the cage.
No, I don't remember this cage.
They made a cage so she could raise bail money. So she went.
Oh, that's great.
Well, the other thing that's cool, you guys have raffles. So there's cool
gifts.
A lot of people donate mm-hmm. really awesome gifts.
Yeah. The bags are great. And it's only like $10. And it ends up being the best show because everybody in LA wants in. Mm-hmm. We get comics like your quality because it's a great crowd.
It's packed.
Yes, it's packed. It's fun. You can, and I'm like, do whatever you want. Whatever you want.
Yeah. It's a really cool thing.
Yeah.
And then you've done some Letterman or Tonight Show? Or?
Letterman. Yeah.
How many times have you been on Letterman?
Just once. But that and I guess Comedy Central and stuff like that. So yeah, I'm still working on it. I never have management or agents, so I don't know how to go about it. So it's always, you know.
Hey man, neither do I. You're on Letterman one more time than I was.
Yeah, the only one around here that has across the board an agent is my daughter.
So. Oh really? Wow.
Yeah, I can't get a meeting.
Yeah, I'm taking her on to auditions.
Yeah, that's funny.
So we got a lot of movies to talk Let's about. I really want to talk about Magnificent Seven. We saw this maybe a week late, but I'm sure some of you also saw it a week late, especially if you were at PodFest. And I will say this for Anton Fuqua. He is a consistent director. This is the exact movie I thought he would make. This is exactly what I thought it would be. It starts off sweeping, epic, you know, kind of aping all the great westerns mm-hmm. that came before it, including the music from the original Magnificent Seven. Right. I'm like, oh, that sounds familiar. I'm like, oh, that's right, it's the same music. We get these interesting characters that we're introduced to, and then second half of the movie is an Expendables movie. So, and that's exactly what we got to see. Big gunfight at the end, but, you know, bad guys coming in waves. You realize that, okay, well, that's probably the same bad guy that died in the other scene because we're just seeing hundreds of them come in and being shot, and then hundreds more come in and shot. I'm like, I'm not really sure how many there are, but it doesn't matter because it's just going to be another wave of extras coming in and dying. So it was the exact movie I thought he would make. not a great movie. But go ahead.
It's funny. I think I just had more fun.
Uh-huh.
I think I had more fun at this movie. And I too share the, you know, Anton Fuqua has a hard time making a full film. Yes. This one I was like, you know, it was fun. It was fine by me because it was fun. And, you know, the original Magnificent Seven, which is, of course, as we've talked about, based on Seven Samurai by Kurosawa. It kept, I mean, so I know what's going to happen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was fine with it. And I was fine with how he handled it. I was expecting a big, you know, it's the original had a big crazy shoot 'em up at the end. And, you know, I don't know. I sort of like
the original Seven Samurai. It was a big fight.
Yeah. So that's going to happen. And
someone was in their underwear.
Yeah. Me, when I was watching it. Yeah. I thought it was cool. I thought it was fun. And it was.
I'm a little less forgiving on it. I didn't have as much fun on it. And I wanted to. I went in with, like I said, very low expectations. But what I don't like is these remakes that are literally, they're not only remaking them, but they're dumbing down the originals. I mean, it's a slick, glossed up, Fast and Furious version.
Why make the same movie again?
Yeah. But why make it dumber? I mean, it's like a dumbed down version, because when you look at the original Seven Samurai, there was a lot of other things going on. You also had things changing historically, where a lot of the samurais were becoming poor, and some of them were Ronins. But you also had the villagers who needed the samurai to protect them from the bandits. But you also, as the story progressed, you realize, well, the villagers aren't saints either. They had a cache of weapons and armor from samurais that they had actually attacked and robbed themselves. Mm-hmm. So you have all these different things going on, and all this commentary about human nature and all these things. And the Magnificent Seven, the original was interesting too in that regard, where you got to see these characters develop and why they were different and how they would come together. But here, I thought it was just like, all right, we're just going to take like the most basic and everything on the surface, we're going to put in this movie, and then that's all we're going to see. Even like with Training Day, when you got into the depth of the characters, you know, at the beginning, not necessarily towards the end, but I really felt like Anton Fuqua was far more interested in getting the hat exactly right on Denzel Washington's head in every shot, because it was perfect and symmetrical in every single shot. Like, it was never to the side or anything. It was like, literally, it was almost like a mathematical formula on how to make Denzel Washington look good in a cowboy hat.
Wow, I haven't heard a lot of complaints about the hat.
And exactly, because it was so perfect.
It's a really good hat filmmaking.
Yeah, it was really good. You know, the mise en scène for hat wearing was unbelievable, the way it filled the frame. Rather than actually making these characters breathe and having them becoming actually fleshed out characters.
I mean, that's an interesting point. I think I went in just sort of like
knowing what you were getting.
Knowing what I was getting, and I wasn't expecting that much. But it was, because I was watching the movie going, it didn't have a lot of those interesting things. There's a great scene in the original Magnificent Seven where Charles Bronson, there's a village kid, and he's like, oh, you're tough. You got a gun and you're a hero. And he goes, no, I'm not a hero. Your dad who works every day and doesn't, you know, and he's really reflecting on his life. Like, cause he knows he's at the end of his life. Like they're all like, we're going to probably die in this battle. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I've spent my life being a criminal and a bandit. And it's not something to be revered. It's not heroic. Getting up and working at a job you might not like to feed your family, that's heroic. And that was such a really poignant scene, because it was sort of saying that the statement it was making is that a life of crime isn't,
The glamour of the gunfighter is not what it seems.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And also, too, you're right. There wasn't any... The villagers in this one, the townspeople were just scared townspeople, and the bad guy was 100% bad, and they were just scared and they needed help.
Right.
And they didn't have that sort of... Because that was the thing that was Kurosawa was so good at, was sort of pulling back and revealing, you know, Rashomon, the three different tellings of the story. Yes. You know, like he was so good at saying there's a lot of, it's not just good and bad.
Right.
Here's
the perspectives.
Here's the perspectives. And this person might not be 100% good. And this person might not be 100% bad. And this movie, it was just sort of,
When was the original, when was that actually made?
Wasn't it 70s?
The original was made in the 70s. I'll pull that up in a second.
And they also, it was so successful too. There was at least one sequel after that, I believe. The Magnificent Seven, like Ride Again or something like that.
Well, you know, that's probably part of it.
1960.
Oh, 1960.
I was wrong.
That whole thing that you're talking about where everybody is not all good and is not all bad, that's why I think I'm very much into all the TV series, and that's why, like The Sopranos or even Dexter, you're watching them from a different point of view,
right,
which
bad.
I think, yes, makes people much more attached to the film. Like in some of these, maybe that's why I'm not crazy about superhero films, because there's the flaw and then it's so big and it's what they do is so big. But I really always like that it's not, you know, I think with the series, HBO started that out where everybody's
Sopranos
not all good, everybody's not all bad. Yeah.
Kind of a game changer. How many sequels were there? Was it just one?
I think it was just... There was... Guns of the Magnificent.
Guns of the Magnificent
was just
Seven.
That was just the second one. So that was that was in 1969.
Okay.
And that just didn't do as well, you know, and... It was a Mexican revolutionary hires gunslingers, you know.
Right. Sort of like, okay. It was like money grab.
And then, I'm sorry. There was Return of the Magnificent Seven in 66 and then Guns of the Magnificent Seven.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean.
Law of diminishing returns.
Yeah. It's funny, Karen, you talk about that because we have mentioned it before on this show of like big budget studio movies are kind of missing the point, and episodic on the streaming services, Netflix,
right,
and other, like, they're really getting into very complex and very interesting characters.
And I'm hoping this isn't a trend, because with Star Trek and now Magnificent Seven, like these big budget, you know, dumbed down remakes, they're not good for anything, really.
Right. No,
I mean, I'd like to see, if you're going to remake something, show me something different or more interesting. Like 3:10 to Yuma was a great remake.
Great remake.
And it's a Western, and it had all these elements in it. Like, you know, what makes that so much more interesting than this one? It's better.
Well, they developed the characters better. They could do stuff thematically more now than you could back in the 50s when that original Western came out. You know, there were so many more restrictions on what you could say and shoot and show,
right,
and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think they need to do.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
You reminded me of something I want to look up on a film.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess I'm just sort of going in with low expectations to a lot of these. But again, it sort of, I feel like I did want to, it's, Star Trek's a great example. I came out of Star Trek and went, great action movie, not a good Star Trek movie, because it didn't have all the intelligence of Star Trek, and this didn't have the intelligence of the Kurosawa film that went into Magnificent Seven.
Mm-hmm.
Good cast, I mean, good actors, interesting scenes.
Any women?
Yes, actually,
did she do something good? Did she hurt somebody?
Oh, well.
Did she get to play?
She was the grieving widow that became cleavage with a gun.
Oh, well.
Yeah, she...
That's the name of my dry cleaner.
Yeah.
Cleavage with a gun.
Cleavage with a gun. Yeah, she was the grieving widow. So, I mean, you know, it was that thing of like, well, she's a strong woman. It was her. She was the townspeople were scared, and she was the strong one. And it's like, awesome. But then she's got to be in the low cut cleavage.
Right,
you know, right.
She's always
got to
be bending over, like, oh,
I keep dropping everything.
Oh, let me pick up this rifle. Bam.
How am I going to fight the bad guys when I'm so clumsy?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, and it was, you know, it was played by Haley Bennett. She's an interesting actress. I like watching her, and she had some good scenes. I think Antoine Fuqua was decent at doing
first halves of movies.
But not even that though, because he's decent at capturing some one-on-one acting scenes between two good actors. Like that, he's good at.
He's also a really stylized director.
Right.
Like you see, like, you know, as far as like action and just the way, like, it's almost like he's Zack Snyder-ish in that.
Right.
But the problem with that is when you become stylized, you lose any depth or any kind of meat to anything else.
Because if you look at, you know, I mean, and a lot of his movies, you know, Equalizer, The Shooter, you know, I mean, those movies.
It sounds like his career got a little pigeonholed.
Yeah, Olympus Has Fallen. You don't. That's the. You know, so he's doing these big budget action things, and all of those movies have decent one-on-one, you know, two actors that are really solid in what they're doing.
Okay,
but the bigger picture.
But name a scene like in where you felt that way, like a scene with two actors.
Okay, in the Shooter,
Magnificent Seven.
In Magnificent Seven, where Denzel Washington is around the campfire talking to people, like. The one-on-one scene with him and the Indian, where he's speaking in, I think it was, I forget which tribe he was, but he was speaking in
Chinese.
Yeah, no,
that tribe. Yeah. They're very big now.
But where the Indian walks up and they're speaking and he's one-on-one, and so all the cowboys, you know, they got their guns, like, uh-oh, here comes an Indian, and he, you know, when there's one, there's more, and they're all flipping out, and he goes up and, I think it's Comanche. And he's speaking a little bit of Comanche, and that's a good one-on-one scene. Mm-hmm. There's some scenes where we get a little character development with Vincent D'Onofrio's character, who plays this crazy mountain man.
Yeah, some weird autistic mountain man.
Yeah, well, that's just Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah, half and half. Yeah.
Always has to make everything really big. Mm-hmm. So I thought that some of those scenes were interesting, but you know, overall it does fall into that big budget action thing. Cause big budget, as we say it all the time, it's like, we're sound like broken records, but big budget action can be interesting if there's a decent enough script and there's some character arc and character development. It then makes and when the action has a point to it, or it furthers the character arc, or that's interesting. But this was just because that was the other thing in the original one, the 1960 Magnificent Seven. First they're just guns for hire and they're doing it for money, and then they sort of kind of realize, we need to do this, this is what's right,
right?
And there's some of that in this movie, but not a lot.
Do you remember this film Serenity?
Yes.
Now talk about, because it basically is always the same story. There's good guys, bad guys, and the good guys are going to win in the end. But that movie was one that was so well done, and so the characters were so interesting and very different. Even the casting seemed to be very off center. And that is one of the few action movies I've probably seen two or three times because of that.
It's funny you bring that up. It's Joss Whedon, and it's based off of a TV series that was very popular, you know. And that, so they had fleshed out characters, and it was, I saw that movie, I had not seen the TV series.
And also he based it too as a Western in space.
Right. He based it as a Western in space. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I thought was done really well with the film, I didn't need to know that much about the series to be engaged with these people and what they were doing, and sort of, I mean, that's the Han Solo character arc, is he's just doing it for the money, and then he actually has a turn, you know, he's doing it for the right reasons. And when that's done correctly, it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. When you see the flawed criminal, you know, find some type of humanity.
And the horrifyingly creepy assassin in that movie.
Yeah, so it was like, that's a good example, and that was a Western in outer space. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
all right.
So all right, next movie is Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. This was a Tim Burton adaptation from the novel. Now, I will say, I went into this movie with very low expectations because I've read the book, and the book was terrible. You know, it's a big bestseller, but if you've read any other book in your life, you realize that this has been pretty much cobbled together from better things, everything from the X-Men,
that the sort of ad on the
that's on the
cobbled
poster
together from better things.
And it has this weird this novelty, and they're like, well, we just found some old photographs and they're really weird and creepy, so you know, it wrote the book around them and all this. I'm like, well, yeah, why don't you write the book around a story? How about that? Try that. So here's where I will say is Tim Burton can really shine, is this wasn't a remake. This was an adaptation. His adaptations are 1,000 times better than any remake he will ever do. So what he did is he made this his own. He actually made it a coherent storyline, and he even improved the characters. Like, it was really interesting. Like, In the book, you know, the father of the kid who discovers that, you know, he's, quote, peculiar, he has powers, is like a really absent, you know, stupid parent, you know, dad. Like, but here they give him a little more things to do and he's a little bit more involved and engaged. Like, because it's always sloppy writing when you write, like, young adult or children's novels, like, oh, all the adults are stupid. They don't know what's going on. They never see the monsters or whatever. And every adult is like that because it gets them out of the way. And now they can never help or do anything like that. So this one was a little more interesting where
and
the father
real,
was still
kids
involved.
Are dumb.
Yeah. You know, the father was actually a little more engaged. So, but what I liked about it too is the book just kind of ends. Like the movie, the entire third act of the movie isn't in the book. So he created an entire ending to actually make it a little more coherent. And
sounds like he felt the same way about the book that you did.
I really think he did because all the problems I had with the book, he corrected. And so even when you get to this home for the peculiar children and there's like these weird things about time loops and World War II, and he made it more interesting and more compelling because he adjusted the characters to where, all right, well, now this doesn't feel so much like you're stealing from everywhere else. Because Tim Burton, as an artist, puts his own stamp and his own interpretation on things. And the production design's really nice. The creature design's really nice. But there's like definitely some weird flaws. Like at the beginning, the monster seems like a giant in the forest. And then we realize, no, they're more man-sized. I'm like, well, no one corrected that at the beginning when we first saw the shot. It was a weird thing. Like there's a couple inconsistencies and everything gets a little weird with the time loopy kind of stuff. You know, I'm like, well, wait, what are the rules now? All right, I get you can turn into a bird. Now we're stuck in this time loop. You don't age, but you age when? No, wait, you age now. How does this work if you leave? So when you put all that aside, but it was like really good classic Tim Burton. It was creepy. There were a lot of kids in peril. In fact, when I brought both kids, and when the 8-year-old, I'm like, this might have been a little more advanced. There's like creepy, like eye eating, and like weird, like hard.
So were you like, if elements. You don't do your homework,
yes, this
happen.
Is it. Yeah, I'm like, all right, gosh, are you going to be able to sleep tonight? But he seemed okay with it. You know, my daughter loved it. She, you know, she's at that perfect age, like 11. This is like the kind of stories that she really likes. And so I will say, after the book being such a disappointment, the movie was like a pleasant surprise. I really like what Tim Burton did with it. So
that's rare when the movie's better than
extremely
the book.
Rare. And it was a weird good pairing of like Tim Burton being able to put his stamp and his interpretation on this because it was the book was so weak and poorly put together that this was much more interesting. So yeah, so I recommend it. It was a good creepy kid story, and what's interesting is it cost more than Magnificent Seven.
Wow,
it was.
Mm-hmm. I think kids though we underestimate how dark children are.
I think that's very true
because Harry Potter wasn't the beginning of that. He's locked in a cupboard,
right?
Like that's not, you
that's
know,
how it starts.
Yeah, they're not. I don't think they're all unicorns and rainbows, right? Mm-hmm. They like to be scared just like anybody
kids
else.
Like dark stories for sure.
Yeah, and now. With the way advertising, there are some horror movies out there that the billboard is scary. Like I would have been really scared if I saw that when I was a kid, and they're just everywhere now.
Well, I remember that as a kid. I remember, you know, getting scared by stuff, and then I mean, we had some, you know, like you're just doing some make believe game and just coming up with some just really dark stories, and like, the swimming pool full of pudding. It was like there's a dragon in your pillow or whatever.
And he craves human flesh.
Yeah, it was like really dark stuff. That's
but,
a great point.
So this Samuel Jackson plays a little too over the top on this, but he one of the reasons Tim Burton said he added and changed the ending is because he wanted to get Samuel Jackson in the movie more. So he understands if you have Samuel Jackson in your movie, you should really use him.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
He shouldn't just be in a couple scenes in the beginning. So
that's
it was,
what could have put the budget over Magnificent Seven right there.
Yeah, that could have probably... So you have, like I said, Tim Burton, his adaptations, like Big Fish is an excellent adaptation, but keep him away from remakes, but let him adapt and spin things through his lens, and you get something that's really interesting.
Apparently, it didn't do very well at the box office. It had, you know, as you said, a $110 million budget. It's done, as of October 3rd, it's done $31 million.
Yeah, so that's kind of a bomb for sure.
Well, domestically, but I bet you this cleans up overseas.
I think it will, too, and I think it'll do very well on DVD and on demand, too.
Do you think, Chris, it might have scared some parents away, like, this is too much for my younger kids?
I think so, for sure. Like, I would kind of go, like, 8 and up for sure. Like, this isn't like the Pixar movie where you take the 4 and 5 and 6-year-olds. This is definitely a much darker story. But it's more like, you know, you can really target kind of like the Harry Potter crowd with this, or Series of Unfortunate Events, which actually they're making a TV series of now. So it's really, it fits into that
kids that
category.
Like Halloween.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was, so I think this will make money eventually. I don't think it, like you said, it's probably not cleaning up at the box office.
Don't you think making a remake, though, is got to be very hard because you have images planted in your head? And if you're remaking a movie, it's obviously one that you like. So you already know what you like about it. So to redo that, I know, like, things like Amityville Horror was made exactly, like, almost scene for scene exactly alike. Or they did a Psycho with Vince Vaughn, and were saying how they were trying to get the scenes exactly alike. That must just be so imprinted that somebody's afraid to veer on that.
Well, and that's usually a failure when people do that. I mean, that's the whole point of doing a remake, is to do a reinterpretation of the controversy of the different stand. Yeah. Otherwise, why remake the exact same movie again?
Right.
There's no point.
Right.
You know, and then you just have, it's like Blair Witch. It was the exact same movie with slightly better effects and a camera.
Just re-release it.
Yeah, exactly. Just literally re-release it. So, you know, otherwise you're literally just getting the audience who's interested and hasn't seen the first one, which is a much smaller percentage.
Right.
And that's what happened with Blair Witch. It didn't do well.
Well, speaking of that, now we want to get into, you saw the movie The Witch, it came out last year, but we also...
Without the word Blair.
Nice.
Karen, but you, let's go into The Witch and then other, because what do you label yourself in terms of a paranormal, you study paranormal?
Paranormal investigator, work with friends.
Ghost fighter.
Yes.
Karen Runtowski, Ghost Fighter.
A lot of my friends are demonologists, Reiki masters, so we work in the field of a lot of the topics that these movies are made about. Mm-hmm. So I do find some of them are just fun, and some of them are over the top, and some of them I know the people that, like, I go to, if there's a movie called The Fire in the Sky. A Fire in the Sky, mm-hmm. about the gentleman from Arizona. They were abducted. Yes, I know that man. I worked at a paranormal convention with him. So to hear his story and know the movie and know what's real and what isn't is always that sort of a thing now. That's very interesting.
That was a very intriguing film. That came out in the 90s, I believe. It was Robert Patrick was one of the guys.
It was the biggest UFO case to that time because they were looking to arrest his friends for murder because the ship
took him.
Yeah, they were out logging, or they were out in the, you know, cutting trees and logging, and he was gone for 5 days.
Right.
It's a fascinating, if you ever get a chance to see him speak, his name's Travis Walton. Mm-hmm. He speaks at a lot of UFO conferences, and it's just fascinating. So it was worldwide.
It's based on his book, Travis Walton's book.
Yes.
Give us go into the detail of what you've seen from the actual Travis Walton speaking and what was in the movie. Like, what did they add or take out or change?
Well, what's fascinating too is he's actually looking for somebody to not remake that movie, but sort of remake what happened after and how he was handled by doctors and how his brother saved his life. And it's very, very creepy and very interesting. And I almost went there. He had a group go back for the 10-year anniversary or the 20-year anniversary, something like that. It was fascinating of the parts of the movies that he liked and the parts that he didn't like. And for example, one of the things is, I think he thought they were very hard on the relationship with the other guys because it looked like they were all fighting. I didn't feel that because they actually made it, I believe it was his brother or his friend that they all got together in the end. They made that clear that they weren't all fighting and they weren't against each other, and they didn't turn against each other either. And some of that stuff bothered him. He did say there was a scene in there where he's in the spaceship and the aliens put something over him that looks like they're putting cellophane over him and he can't breathe. He said that was like an adaptation. He said the air was so thin he could not catch his breath. And so he said that was one of the better ways they made it seem. But he also said there was something about when he was in the there was the, they did take a little artistic license, but he, a lot of it was on. He was more, in fact, when he was talking about the complaints of the movie, it was more the relationships and how the other people looked rather than what actually happened, which is horrifying when you watch
it. So, like, even things like the production design of, like, the aliens themselves and their suits, were they based on his accounts?
Yes. He didn't say, and I don't want to quote him too much, but he did not say any of that was wrong. And what else is very interesting is when you meet him, he's a large 6 foot man that is solid muscle. So when he was, I think, 18 or 20 when this happened, you can't imagine. Like, it's terrifying to watch that, to think of an 18-year-old man that's tough been logging, and,
yeah,
being right. pulled around by little men with big heads. But it was, yeah, so that part of it, the he said he is looking for someone now to do the follow-up because there was so much more to it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. In fact, it was in the big scene is where he gets out of the truck and the light comes down and they're yelling, get in the truck. And the light picks him up and throws him. Well, when he got on the ship, he kept saying one of the things he really focused on was the eyes. Oh, that's all he remembers is the eyes and the aliens looking at him and staring at him. Every other abductee says that there is telepathic. They know what the aliens are thinking when they talk to them, and he couldn't get anything. And then they found out after he had gotten a concussion that actually a part of his brain wasn't working that would have been the telepathic part. So there's all these little pieces that fit together as to why that happened to him. But it's a fascinating story, and I'd love to see somebody redo that.
So what's some other stuff? Because you were on a Ghost Hunters TV show for a while, or
no, I have my own little comedy series, but right. that I do on YouTube. Oh. But no, I do, a lot of private people that have trouble in their house. We go in and take care and investigate.
Can you like poltergeist cleanse kind of thing?
I can, yeah. As a Reiki master, I can. If you're getting, it depends. There's a huge amount of difference. In fact, sometimes that's why certain movies I think really represent and others don't.
Can I interrupt with this one thing, because I was really curious when I saw the original Paranormal Activity movie.
Right.
It made a very clear difference between ghosts, paranormal, and demons. And
exactly.
I thought that was really interesting. And I felt like I went to my wife when we saw it. I said, you know, this is actually accurate as far as like the research and stuff that's been done on ghosts and demons and why there's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what did you think? Did you think that one was pretty accurate?
I did like that one. I mean, and the last scene was probably something that just threw it together. Mm-hmm. But yes, it was very accurate in that these things are not, whenever I see a YouTube video of some poltergeist where everything's being thrown around the house, I'm like, no. That's probably 99% not true. But things moving or that type of stuff, and your point is exactly right. There are so many things between human ghost, which is that's what we call it. That was some spirit that was a human, and a demon or an angel. That there's so many things in between there that we don't even know what they are, and they usually come across. I think one of the best movies was an old Sally Kirkland movie. I believe it's called The Haunting, and that movie, that name's been used over and over and over. That to me was spot on. They were seeing like not a mist, but like a fog, and it kind of had a voice to it.
1963?
Yes, I believe it is. Sally Kirkland?
Was that Robert Wise?
This is...
it might be the 70s. I think it was the 70s, but I know
Robert Wise directed the one in 60s. Julie Harris, Claire Boom, and Richard Johnson.
No, look up A Haunting or The Haunting, but it's I know.
A million
but it's
named Haunting.
Absolutely Sally Kirkland. Mm-hmm. Sally Kirkland horror movie. But that had exactly it's not you only in very few cases also is it absolutely demonic. So you can have a spirit in your house that's just troublesome. You can have, you know, I remember on watching one of these guys' paranormal tapes, just a big black thing of goo came around the corner and then looked at them and then moved back out. So there's so many different things it could be.
Well, I mean, so go into the specifics of what these just to define them. So anyone listening, because who's like, what?
Right. Yes,
who
I'm very
them all
deep
together,
into this.
Or just goes.
I keep trying to drag it back to movies. So
yes, no, please do.
No, there's actually
like Exorcist is specifically demonology.
That's
there's
demonology.
No, there's no ghosts in Exorcist.
Right. That's a demon. Mm. That's a rarity that can happen. You can get You can get what they call fairies. I know we have a different definition of fairies now. There's all kinds of elementals, which are some elementals work with water, some work with air, some work with fire, and they all do different things. There's just I call them attachments. I've had an attachment myself, which caused me to be very, very depressed. In fact, the reason that alcohol is called spirits is because when people are drunk, darker entities can attach to them very easily because their aura is compromised. So I wish I knew everything in between there, but some of them, it's just different levels of how strong they are. That's a good way to explain it. So a demon would be the strongest.
What is a demon specifically? Like, how would you define it?
I would call a demon, I mean, you could call it a fallen angel, but it's something so powerful and so evil completely through. It's ancient. In the Middle East, they call them jinn. Mm-hmm. They actually leave sacrifices out at their house of food and stuff so that the jinn will not come in. But it's probably the
Haunted. It was a 1991 TV movie that was Sally Kirkland.
Sally Kirkland. Okay, based it was a TV book. Movie. Okay. That was the most accurate that I've ever seen.
Okay. Based on a book by Robert Kieran.
Right. That's fascinating, and it's still as scary as, still one of the scariest movies I've ever seen.
Okay.
So you can watch it now and it holds up. Perfectly.
Great. So anyway, go into the...
So darker energies are what we're talking about, which are, there are darker energies and lighter energies and energies everywhere, and just kind of stuff that we don't see. So...
How does that, I mean, how would you, like, where do they come from? Or how would it, like, attach to you? Or where, like...
Well, my attachment came from fooling around with witchcraft. With a bunch of other people when we really thought it was funny. And we did it at my house, and there was just something that we all sort of made a wish on a string, and whoa, isn't this funny? Which is funny because my friend that was the demonologist was there, and he's the only one that said, I'm not doing this. And we did it at my house, and then everybody started to call and said, you know, I did. I just found an extra $1,000. You know, I did actually end up on a TV series. You know, I did. And then I started to get very, very, very depressed. And it's actually a funny story, but
isn't it because everyone else was giving you good news about their careers?
Yeah, yeah.
We all have demons in show business.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was something just attached to my energy, and it took over. Let me explain two different things. This will give you a better idea of it. When we go ghost hunting, we have to be very careful about our energy because you can actually have an entity walk on, and I have seen, we call it a walk on. With a demon, it's
SAG?
A possession.
It's a union ghost walk on.
Yes. It's a union ghost. With a demon, it's a possession, and that's where everything changes. With a walk on, that's where you're in a haunted place where a spirit can actually take over someone's body. They can't do it for an extended period of time because it takes a lot of their energy, but I have seen people turn into other people, start speaking with accents, or have things like that happen where the person is also at the same time going, get it out, get it out. I've seen people just go down, just like that would be a human spirit taking on your body. So that would be called a walk-on. And that really can happen. And after you see that once, you really start to examine if we need the death penalty, where all these people are saying, I don't know what happened. And you start to think maybe some of them don't. Maybe some of them did get drunk and had a walk-on, and all of a sudden that was a different person. Attachments are sort of, I would say they're halfway between demon and human, and they are just things that are around. They're energies that are around that get attached to us. If you are sad, or you're not keeping yourself physically active, or you do a lot of horror movies or Ouija boards or stuff, you're really compromising your energy. I think in the Bible when they say, cleanliness is next to godliness. It means your energy, your aura, keep that clean, or things do get attached. And then you start to take on, it's like this, if a spirit, say a woman died as a crack addict, and she doesn't, you know, as before she passes on, she's like, I shouldn't have done that. All I want is more crack. I want to get in a physical body. So then here come the cops, and they say, well, we got to investigate this crime. And then they see other drug addicts and stuff like that. She can attach to one of them, either going, she can attach to the cop if he's not keeping control of his aura. I'm sorry if I'm jumping all over this. I got very excited. She can attach to the cop. Can you solve the crime? Or if she's an addict, she can attach to another addict and be like, have that same energy. Their energies are now matching. I want more drugs. I want more crack. So now the person that's just regular human is now got that energy double of that addiction energy because she has someone attached to her.
Now, what have we seen that in cinema at all?
No.
That type of attachment
thing? Well, look how hard it was for me to explain right. it, you know? it's and I try to explain it so that it's not out in the crazy level, because when you do Reiki, this is sort of all stuff that is encompassed in there of keeping your energy and your aura clean. But no, I've never seen anybody really, because it's
demonic. Seen hauntings or possessions.
Well, we've sort, we sort of seen, though, in Ghost, in the movie Ghost, didn't we see like the bad...
Those dark things that came for him. And Ghost is incredibly accurate movie. Incredibly accurate.
So you have, basically you have heaven and hell, and that's where you go when you die, and then you get stuck if neither comes.
Yeah, you can get stuck, or I'm sure it's a lot more complicated, and it's always, you know, the more that we learn, the crazier it gets, it seems, you know. I know that but demons fill seats. You know,
right.
the attachment, but what? Yeah. So it's just bad energy, and then he had a Reiki session and he was okay? Well, that's not really a great thing.
There's no car chase.
Yeah. So it's pretty deep kind of stuff out there. But the movies that I always think represent is that one. The Sally Kirkland is a perfect example of that. Their Ghost is excellent. And there was another one, The Exorcism of Emily Rose, I found very interesting.
Really?
And very, if there's, I think that, I don't know how much of that they fudged, but somebody knew their stuff.
And what are some movies that you just kind of laugh at and like, well, that's not even close to what paranormal would be?
Anything that's too big, in fact, and I didn't laugh at this movie, but A Haunting in Connecticut was very interesting because the real woman telling the story is way more scary than the movie. So the things that they started to adapt and with special effects and make bigger were, you know, just tell the story and people will be terrified.
Well, now, what do you feel about, like, the Conjuring movies? Like, those are all supposedly based on specific events, but there's a lot of controversy where there are specifically frauds. And, I mean, obviously, all supernatural, there's, you know, there's a high level of skepticism on everything.
Right.
But for those two paranormal investigators specifically, there's a lot of controversy surrounding them. Yeah,
yes.
The Warrens. So, now, what did you think of them and the movies?
I actually very much like the Warrens. They really were on the edge of, you know, opening that whole thing up. And it's funny because the people really liked The Conjuring and thought it was fun. And then it got to the end part where she was in the cellar and the chair starts to go up and move around. And that was the part when everybody I know in the paranormal kind of went, oh, that didn't happen. But what happened was the daughter explains it, and it's a little different, but it happened out of sequence. Like, it didn't happen that way, but she said, yes, it was her mother who became possessed, and the face contorted into someone else, and the chair lifted up during this seance that they had. And the Warrens really were they really broke ground like no one else. I also don't know, you know, when you're around darkness that much, you always wonder. There were two paranormal investigators that they ended up murdered. It was a murder-suicide. And they had something dark in their house for years. And it's sort of like, you don't know. When you're playing that close to the dark side, I can't tell you that everything they did towards the end was clear. But that story was actually, most of it was true. They just moved into this house that had this awful thing in it. That, you know, until the end, the special effects... But it was really scary. To me, that was very scary. And obviously, they had to take some license, and she's got the sheet outside, and the thing takes the sheet, and then it's on top of her. Boom.
Right.
So that was probably a little artistic license to show, you know, we got to do this now. That's how it happens. Real demonic possession takes place kind of slowly. There's a whole set of steps that sort of happen. So...
It's like turning into a vampire.
Right. It's not right away.
Yeah. It's a series of feedings.
I think I've scared your audience a little bit.
So now, should we do a tarot reading?
Let's do a tarot reading.
Oh, okay. Let me just recommend one movie.
Okay.
That if you haven't seen it, it's a comedy what is that, a parody of all the horror movie, and it's called Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon. Have you seen it?
No.
It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It was a small independent, and for anybody who really likes creepy things, The Mothman Prophecies.
Oh, I remember that
movie. Was a great movie, a mishmash of the real story, mm-hmm. but there's my favorite documentary. It's a little long, but it's called The Eyes of the Mothman, because the Mothman was absolutely a real... There's something that falls in between demon, and that's a thing flying around that nobody... We still don't know what that is.
That's why we need the Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's funny though. Just you talk about, like, if you're around a lot of negative energy. Like, I've had some times where I was sort of alone and a little depressed, and then I binge watch Breaking Bad, mm-hmm. and I'm like, God, I feel awful.
Right.
You know, like it's great writing and acting, but I'm like, and a friend of mine goes, you just spent, you know,
watched it.
Yeah.
You started watching it in the wrong frame of mind.
Yeah.
And then you went from there.
Yeah, I did that. Yeah. I remember with Mad Men, a friend of mine was like, oh my God, you're just going through a tough time, and then you spent the weekend with Don Draper.
Yeah.
Just like, boozy, end of the world, liar.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Yep. Yeah, it does. They do bring on a certain vibration, so you
identity
kind of...
theft.
Yeah. In fact, it's funny because sometimes the weird noise is me shuffling the cards.
Or is it?
Yeah.
We've never done this before.
Never done
so this will
before.
Be interesting. And then it may be cut out if we don't like the results.
All right. So what
if it does well, we're going to sell CFN tarot cards on the website.
Yeah, we'll sign them. Yeah.
That's right. And also, and what would you like to read? What would be your question to bring in?
I think a question like where's Comedy Film Nerds going?
Where's our business podcast?
Because here, I will say this before we preface, because I'm sure this isn't as weird to me, Chris, because I had hippie parents. Right. So I grew up with this stuff. My dad has done tarot card readings mm-hmm. forever. Like, I'd come home from college and he'd do a reading and stuff. So this stuff doesn't...
Could we do a company reading?
Sure.
Is that possible?
Sure.
By the way, the
tarot cards are always misrepresented in every movie, period.
Right.
Okay. What is in the company as... give me
our,
a name.
Just our company, Comedy Film.
Comedy Film.
So all these shirts you see in this garage,
yes.
This is our business.
Our production, everything.
The ad read. We yep. do some movies. All kinds.
Keep in mind, you're doing the tarot card reading in a garage. So let's see where we can go from there.
Yeah, where we can't turn the air conditioning on during the recording.
All right. And I will explain the cards as we go on. Okay. So.
You know what? We should take a
picture.
A picture.
Yeah, I'll take
for sure. Once the spread is, once the flop is down.
Once you get.
Okay. So, and I will explain. Okay. So you always have two cards that tell me the past, and they are the Page of Cups and the Two of Swords, which means you guys are sort of in this, the Page of Swords is a starting point. You want to get that to a king, or he's the Page of Cups. I'm sorry. And the blindfolded Two of Swords means that at first you guys did not know where this is going. So now you are in the King of Swords. And although you're taking a moment to step back and see, without any emotion, with like logic and real, like we know what's going on. We want to take a look at what our options really are. We're bringing our dreams down to reality and see how we do this, where we can go. Your challenge card is to let go of any disappointment you have had. Water under the bridge, because this is not only building, it is moving in the right direction. There are some bumps over here, but it is moving in the right direction. Wheel of Fortune, in your mind, you're moving into victory. So something around you right now is, we call this sort of half victory. It's a six. So you're moving into a better place that's right in front of you. And there's a tipping point coming for you guys. And when I say tipping point, this is where things start to change. And there will be a change. The only thing is the change is going to get challenge both of you before it gets better. And then you're ending on the Temperance card, which is great, which is a better place of balance with this. And it also might mean paperwork and contracts, okay? And I mean not like ones you have now, but things moving forward. The Devil card is after this change. This is where I said it's up to you guys. And I'll explain the Devil card real quick. Devil has a belly button because it's what we do to ourselves, and it's the idea and limitations that we have chained ourselves to. So taking this realistic look right now is a very good way to get you guys started. disappointed, but do not be chained to the things that have disappointed you or haven't worked before. This has to be open to a whole bunch of things, okay? And then this partnership with you guys is even better than you think. It's going to get better. There's going to be a really good give and take here. And then the Temperance card, that's great. That's balance. That's things moving forward. That's a wonderful card. So it's moving in a right direction. Victory and something right in front of you. And like I said, watch out for this. You'll know this point, because this point where the Devil card comes up, it'll really be a question of, you know, wait a minute, am I really ready for success or am I not, or what's going on there?
Uh-huh.
Make sense?
All right, that sounds pretty good. All right, we'll leave this in.
All right, Chris. Don't screw it up.
Yeah, all right. So, you know, when we get to the Devil card, we'll know it.
You'll know it. You'll call me.
Yeah.
You'll call me.
Well, thank you for the reading.
That was cool.
Mm-hmm.
That was cool. All right. Well, let's get into some trailers and DVDs.
Absolutely. I just want to ask one last question.
Sure.
For tarot card readings, like, I've never seen that done for like a company or a different entity before. So it can be done not just on a person.
Oh, yeah. I can do it for anything.
That's really interesting.
You could do it on...
The drought. I did the drought.
Really?
Somebody asked me in San Francisco if they should sell their house. And I said, not this drought. The next drought. Get out. So we're going to get over this one somehow and it'll be fine. And then there's another one. That's one to go.
Oh.
Well, there's always going to be another one.
Yeah.
It's like another earthquake. We're going to get one eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Trailers. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
This was really, we got to come back down from that.
I know.
It
was really cool.
Yeah. I gotta settle my aura.
Yeah. Careful, not an attachment.
Well, that's the thing. I wonder, like, real quick, I wonder, because sometimes I like, everything's going great and I'm feeling good. And then sometimes I'll get, like, I'll feel really angry or frustrated. And a lot of times I feel like it's just chemical. It's just like, oh, I'm really hungry. But then...
It's old tapes playing.
Right.
And I don't want to go to... But it's old tapes. The next time you do that, call me. I'll give you a free Reiki session.
Okay. All right.
It's good to know.
First one's free.
Right. Yep, first one's free. That's how they get you.
That's how they get us.
That's how you get into the Reiki hook.
Yeah.
I'm on a 3-day Reiki bender.
Yeah. So, okay, so trailers. Jackie. This is the Jackie Kennedy trailer starring Natalie Portman. And it is so being touted as, like, this is her Oscar performance. This is it. This is her big period piece. And it really comes off as the girl from the Star Wars prequels doing a bad accent. It really...
She's just trying to sound like a high-level society person.
I can't say I bought it. So I'm not sure. And now I will, to be fair, it could be a poorly cut trailer. There might be some amazing performances by her in this film, but according to the trailer, maybe not.
You know, I like Natalie Portman. I think she's a fine actress, but boy, this is...
Got to be spot on.
Jackie Kennedy.
Yeah.
Like, you can't...
This is an icon.
This is... You have to cast this so well. You can't just kind of be Jackie. Like... And
Keanu Reeves is JFK. So, no, I'm kidding.
I was about to say, what?
But that's what this felt like. It's like casting Keanu Reeves as JFK. So,
okay.
I don't know.
That's not what you can do for your country.
Yeah. So, the next trailer is Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. Finally. Well, how long were we going to have to wait to get another convoluted, incomprehensible Pirates of the Caribbean movie?
They could. What they should do with this franchise is scuttle it.
Yes.
Weight it down, shoot a hole in the bottom, and then
and make it walk the plank.
Let it just go to the bottom of the ocean.
Now, I will say the first one was an entertaining popcorn movie. I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah.
It was
12
fun.
Years ago?
Or yeah, like, exactly. Yeah. I thought it was really fun. It didn't take itself too seriously. And it actually had a comprehensible story. Like, oh, this made sense. Okay, they're cursed, they're ghosts, and, you know, these characters, I get it. I see what's going on here. Everyone after that was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And this one looks to be no different, whereas basically you're looking at a pirate effects reel. That's what this trailer is a pirate effects reel. And then they show like a picture of Jack Sparrow. We're looking for this pirate. So, oh, he's in the movie. I can't wait to see Johnny Depp as...
Dead Men Do Tell Tales.
Yeah. So it was really...
I'm off on the premise.
Yeah. So, you know, these pirates needed a couple of Reiki sessions.
Yeah,
it was really,
exactly.
It would have been better.
A couple Reiki sessions.
Cross them over. Let them go.
So So this again, not a great week for trailers.
So this franchise needs a Reiki session, yes, and a tarot card reading.
Yeah,
okay, I'm into that. It makes the movies better. Yeah, I'm all for it.
That would be great. You could tarot read a script. So DVD and Blu-rays, X-Men Apocalypse. This was if you lower your expectations, you might have fun watching this movie.
It's not the best X-Men movie to come out, but it's also not awful.
I will say it's not the worst.
It's not the worst.
Yeah, but it's, again, faint praise. My favorite part of watching this film was seeing it at preview night and packed movie theater, and when Jean Grey went all Dark Phoenix, guy stood up from his chair and just went, yeah, and started clapping. I'm like, all right, I'm seeing this with a bunch of super fans.
See, I broke up with a guy once who stood up and cheered at the president's speech in Independence Day.
Wow.
And I was like, that's it.
That you have to break up with yeah, that. If that's not a sign from beyond,
he
I don't know.
He got out of his seat and I was like, this is over.
Yeah. You were wise. You were wise to do that. You never know when you're going to see a warning sign.
I know.
You got to pay attention.
Yeah, you
Somebody
do.
Somebody claps
yeah.
at the wrong scene.
In Independence Day?
Yeah. Someone may be crying at The Purge. Something like that, you know? You know, maybe there's something off.
Yeah.
And The Purge election year, that's not going to turn into a late night joke. That title isn't, is it?
No. No, as I said before when I saw this movie, it's basically a documentary about what would happen if Trump becomes president.
Yeah.
I think the designers at Hollywood Horror Nights took your advice.
Yeah.
The entire park is now a purge zone.
Oh, wow.
For Halloween Horror Nights, where you actually, each section you go to is a different purge theme from one of the different movies. So we're going in a couple weeks. I can't wait. It'll be fun. They always do a good job with it. Swiss Army Man is the next movie. This is like a weird kind of Castaway type movie where, you know, he's marooned on a deserted island, but then he uses a dead body to help him.
It's kind of weird. It's Paul Dano and Daniel Radcliffe, Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
One of them's dead?
Yeah. Daniel Radcliffe is dead. It's one of these movies I missed. I really want to see because it seems...
It's Castaway meets Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah.
be the pitch. Yeah.
And then just went, yep, here you go. Here's money.
Here's $10 million. Make me proud, kid.
If it's Paul Dano being a weirdo, I'm in.
Yeah, how could it not be? If Paul Dano was in a movie, he's playing a weirdo.
I don't think anyone else you could cast. You need to get off an island with a dead guy. Oh, Paul Dano.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Is Michael Shannon not available? and the site spotlight, Neil is continuing to churn out the weekly film news, but we want to mention this. This is really exciting. Every year, Shriekfest happens right across from Paramount at Raleigh Studios, and it's a great horror genre festival. It goes from Friday to Sunday. Neil will be there all weekend, so go to Shriekfest this weekend and check it out. We're going to have Denise Gossett on the show next week to talk about the festival. And what I really like about this festival is it really caters to its core audience. Like it's one of those festivals that could have expanded but chose not to. They had different screenings in different theaters, and Denise started getting complaints. Well, now I can't see everything. I don't want to have to make choices. So she went back and scaled down the festival where everyone can see everything from Friday to Sunday. It's not the largest festival, but that's by choice. So it's a really interesting, nicely curated horror genre film fest. So check it out.
Cool. And then on the Facebook fan page, we posted the...
The tarot reading?
We're going to do that. We did a movie fact. George Lucas gave Mel Brooks his blessing to make Spaceballs on the condition that no action figures be made, and as they could be confused with actual Star Wars toys.
That's a great stipulation. That is fantastic. Like, that's something I never would have thought of.
And then Brent Russell wrote, I wonder if that inspired the Spaceballs merchandise scene.
Oh yeah,
which is an interesting thing that Brent Russell put and Paul Griswold posted. That's the reason I have no barf with realistic tail wagging actions. Schwartz projecting Lone Star. It just goes on this rant of the whole thing, which was very funny.
That's awesome.
Thanks for those posts, you guys.
So the other thing I wanted to let you guys know, we have new stuff in the merch store. If you didn't get anything from LA Podfest this year, we have the shirts and posters for sale at comedyfilmnerds.com. So you can check those out. And also,
I'm wearing one today. So in the picture that's posted of Chris and Karen and myself from today, yes, I will be wearing the baby blue one.
And also, we have now restocked all the sizes and all designs of all the Crab Feast t-shirts. A lot of you have been emailing and saying, when are the other sizes going to be in? Since we're kind of taking over the merchandise, it took a little longer to get everything, but now everything's set, everything's there. You could order whatever you like.
Cool.
I can attest to that because I'm sitting right in front of it. Yes. You have everything.
Any size you want.
Yep.
Could you read the tarot of t-shirts?
Yes.
So which ones are going to sell more than...
I think the baby ones.
Yeah, if there's an earthquake, we're going to be beaten to death by other comedians' merchandise.
Oh, how ironic.
So premiering this week, Birth of a Nation, which we were just talking about. You know, this movie is starting to come with its own personal controversy of the filmmaker and, you know, rape charges that were
many years ago.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So... But it came up back up to surface, and it's looking like he didn't handle them as well as he could have, and it made the studio nervous and all this stuff. But, you know, the film itself has been widely reviewed as being excellent, so I am curious to see it.
And
so.
our comedian friend Jason Stewart is in that. He has a big part mm-hmm. in it. And
I'm interested to see it. You know, I will see what happens with the charges and stuff. I like that kind of stuff. I'm just like, oh man.
Acquitted though.
Acquitted?
Yes.
As much as I hate, you know, and I'm the biggest feminist either. We have to acquitted is acquitted. Let it go.
Right.
Good point. You know, and what made it worse though is that I don't know if you know the whole story. You guys can read online, but this is just pieces of it. The girl killed herself later. Mm. So she's not around to, you know, talk on her behalf anymore. So that's also something that's making it a lot more
how long ugly. After the incident did she
that I'm not sure
because that would be article. That would be a factor in my opinion forming. Yeah. Right.
So there's a lot of things going on over there. The next movie is Girl on the Train. This is the Emily Blunt thriller. I love a good twisty thriller, so I'm excited to see this.
I'm excited to see it. I like Emily Blunt. I also, you know, she's really...
I'm hoping it's not too Gone Girl. You know, if they like do these weird things at Gone Girl. I'm hoping it's just a real classic Hitchcockian thriller.
I think, and she's really intriguing because she has expanded her range as an actress in terms.
Yeah, she sure has.
When she did the Tom Cruise action movie, she also was this badass.
Right.
And now, looking at the trailer, she's maybe like a boozy troublemaker or something. Yeah. She's gone from just like, you know, England's little sweetheart to all this. It's all like, they've done a good job with the trailer because they could so easily just tell us way too much. I mean, they tell almost a little too much in the trailer, but it's enough that I go, okay, did she do it? Did she not do it? Is she involved? What's going on?
Is she on a train, really?
Yeah.
Yes. Is she the girl on the train?
Is she the girl on the train? Like, so I'm excited to see it.
So in this middle school, The Worst Years of My Life, I believe this is based on another book.
Yeah.
So, but it's weird. Neither one of my kids have been jumping to see it. So I think I think they like darker stories. Mm-hmm.
Plus, aren't they in middle school? Why do they want
to
read it?
Yeah. I mean, my daughter's in middle school now. I was like, I don't know if I need to see this movie right now.
It's a movie for like a late teenager.
I haven't seen it.
Like a 19-year-old?
No, I thought it was going to be a Seth Rogen. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, it's
40-year-olds in
it's
middle school.
Aimed at,
what is middle school? What is that? Sixth grade?
6 to 8.
Oh, okay. Yeah I wasn't even
like
in the right age.
Tweens, young teens. So, right. And I think that's it.
All right.
It's our
episode.
Yeah, yeah, and Wow, we covered a lot of ground. How are our auras? Are they good? Are they better after the episode than before?
They're good. They are. There's a lot of
a lot of energy. A lot of
I'll get
bright,
you some crystals,
light.
You guys. You'll be fine.
We're gonna start selling crystals in the store, guys. All your aura crystals.
Could we sell actual auras, CFN auras?
You could put them on
when you get home.
Oh, you could sell aura t-shirts where they're all too big.
That's great.
You should sell those after your shows, Karen. Yes. That's great, Mark.
We only have one size, too big.
Well, cool, that's our show. So, Karen,
if it doesn't fit, you work on your spirit.
That's right. Keep it clean. Salt bath.
Yeah. Where can people find you? Where can, like, online?
Physically
shows?
And spiritually.
Physically, they can find me at KarenRontowski.com, and that'll take you everywhere you need to be, and at Rontowski on Twitter.
Okay.
Nice.
And then this comes out soon then, right?
Today.
Oh, okay. Where the heck am I? I'll announce that on Twitter or something because I'm a lot of places.
Okay. Right. So check Twitter and that'll be your show schedule. Now, is your show schedule on your website as well?
No. I'm very unorganized. Okay. That's why. If everybody went, who is that? It's my fault.
Yeah.
But I have to get it up. I'll work on it.
Okay.
But they can find me telepathically at any time.
That's all you really need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll tag her in the post from Comedy Film Nerds and from myself.
And we'll tag her aura.
Yeah, we'll tag her aura and
attached to me.
Yeah. We'll attach her aura to the tweet. Yeah. But yeah, so you can follow her online and get all of her. She's very funny. She's Karen. I we did a show together. Like a month, maybe a couple weeks ago, and it was great watching you. You're really solid joke writer.
And Jackie Cation thinks the world of you. She's always talking about you.
Thank you for all the kudos, Jackie and Graham. And yes, as you can tell, I'm always in my own little world. So that's where my jokes come from.
All right, guys, I will be headlining the Hollywood Improv tomorrow, Friday, October 7th. That's an 8 o'clock show. Marilyn Rice Cub is going to be on the show. She might remember as Zoe from 24 and a couple other special guests. So get your tickets at improv.com, the Hollywood Improv. And we will be showing Earbuds at the Cluj-Napocoa Comedy Film Festival in Cluj, Romania.
Yes. I will not be going to that, but Graham will. But I'm going to come by to Napa Valley for sure. I'll come up for that weekend.
So I'll be in Romania October 21st through the 24th, screening Earbuds. And then we're at Napa Valley. I'll be there from November 8th to the 13th, and the movie screens on the 10th, 11th, 12th, and 13th. There's four different screenings.
And four different places, too.
Four different places. So if you're anywhere up in that area or live near there or want to drive or like Jason Christian, you're in the movie. You have yet to see it. I'm calling you out, dude. You got to come check it out. And then right after, when we get back...
We're releasing it.
Kickstarter backers are going to get it, what, on the 15th?
Yeah, a couple days before.
Depending
on the technology, if we get all our ducks in a row.
And then so right around the 16th or 17th, it'll be for sale.
That's the window. It might be one or two days on the other side, but that's it. There's no more delays.
No more bullshit.
After Napa Valley, it's all of our... I guess you could call them the distribution requirements are satisfied with the festivals, and then we can allow it to be sold after.
So get a Harry's Razor shaving kit, shave up your face, and be ready to either watch it up north or buy it mid-November.
Yes, it'll be at comedyfilmnerds.com.
Yep.
As a download.
Boom. Mm-hmm. That was the big card that was like, things are changing.
Yes, that could be it.
That's exactly what that is. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that right now. So that's our episode, guys. Like we say, and of course the video archive of LA Podfest is still available for another like 20 days.
Yeah, it's like 50 hours of content. You can't beat it. It's probably more. Yeah, actually, if you add the panels and stuff too.
It's 40 shows that are close to 90 minutes each.
Yeah, so it's even more.
Yeah.
So it's even longer. And it's great. You know, one ticket gets you all the shows. And just one of our best live shows. I think it's the best live show we've ever done with Will Wheaton. But you got to see it. Mm-hmm. It's just the expressions on Will Wheaton's face.
And while we're watching the trailers and the jokes that are made, it's so much fun.
It's great. So remember, use coupon code CFN. You will get $5 off.
And we get paid.
Yes.
Thank you guys for supporting all of this. Thank you, Karen Rontowski.
Thanks, you guys.
This is episode 340 in the books. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember, Han shot first. His aura.
His aura.